The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined by Dr. Michael Oren, who has gone back to Israel, former Israeli ambassador to the United States, former deputy minister. He should be the head of the Jewish agency, but he's been out of town. I don't know what's happened on that. Good morning, Dr. Oren. What's happened on the Jewish agency? Anything?
Oh, nothing, Hugh. They're deadlocked. Don't go there. Let's talk about something easy like Iran or
No, I France. Actually got a note after I talked to you about that, and everybody who wrote me said, yeah, it should be Oren, but Bibi's involved now, and Bibi's cutting off the head of one of his enemies, and someone else is. You're just like the only neutral guy. Why make an easy thing easy? They've got to make it hard, right?
It definitely. I think they voted again last night not to vote or something like this. No, seriously, let's talk about what's happening in the world, more importantly.
All right, tell me about Lavrov. Ukraine. Did you ever deal with Lavrov?
I've met him.
All right, so I got the note from Michael Homre, John Homre, who is one of the smartest guys in D.C., sends out a note to his people. Homre says that his buddies in Europe say Lavrov never lies. He never does. Sometimes he doesn't tell you things, but he never lies, and he says they're leaving on the 20th from Belarus. Do you believe him?
I don't believe him. I do believe him. The question is whether what he says is reflected on the ground. I mean, you have to assume that the foreign minister knows everything that's actually going on in the military. I don't think that my experience in history is not always the case. You know, the famous story of Avi Eben, the famed Israeli diplomat and orator, in 1956 was sitting in the office of John Foster Dulles. It was October 29th, 1956. And Avi Eben was assuring Secretary Dulles that he would never go to war with its Egyptian neighbor.
Suez crisis.
With a note, and the note said that Israel had just invaded Sinai. And Dulles looked up at the foreign minister and said, "You better go back to your embassy. It's better to get to the facts."
So, awkward.
You know, things like this happen in the moment.
awkward. All right, so. Here's my real concern. You know about where you are yourself, a warrior. You've been in a tank. Yesterday, over the Mediterranean, a couple of Russian fighters buzzed a couple of American surveillance planes, and they came within 5 feet of each other. This kind of stuff, this is not smart.
Yeah, I think they sense that that America is wavering, that America's unwilling to commit military forces and willing to project military force, you know, abroad, and Russia is flexing its muscles. I don't know if you received a WhatsApp or an email that I received. Many people received it. It was a comparison between recruitment commercials for the Russian army and the recruitment commercials for the American army. Did you see that?
Oh yeah. Well, we're very woke in the American military these days.
It was extraordinary. I mean, it was profound difference.
Yeah,
and you know, the American commercial was touchy feely, and the Russian commercial was basically "we'll blow your head off."
Yeah,
and
come and develop your people skills versus come learn how to blow people up. Yeah, yeah. You don't have to recruit in Israel because everyone goes in. Give us your 30,000-foot view of what's going to unfold here, Michael. Everyone's guessing. I got to go on special report tonight. I don't like to guess. I'll cite Dr. Michael Oren, former Israeli ambassador to the United States, told me. Yeah. So what's going to happen?
In the Ukraine?
Yeah.
In the Ukraine, I think that I personally think that Putin has basically won. And I'll explain why. You know, he wins if he uses military force. It'll be with a great price for Russia, but keep in mind who he is and the ultra nationalist sentiments that he represents, and he'll play to those sentiments. And since he senses that Europe won't make a strong stand militarily against the Russian incursion, the United States won't. Then in a way, he'll win. The other point is if the diplomacy wins, and if by flexing muscles the West gives in to his demand that Ukraine will not be part of NATO and that missiles that have been deployed in former Soviet satellite countries would be removed, that he wins again. And I've been following a lot of the discussion in the United States, and I've seen both on the right and the left in the United States, among Republicans and Democrats, are saying, hey, wait a minute, the Russians got a little bit of a case here. You know, President Kennedy was willing to go to war in Cuba over Russian missiles in 1962. We're doing the same thing to the Russians.
And, yeah, the New York Times has a story this morning about our putting missiles into a Poland forest. I really can't believe the New York Times running that. That's like you putting up Iron Dome. By the way, did you see Israel's getting criticized by some anti-Israel people for not giving Iron Dome to Ukraine, which, of course, you cannot do?
Well, we could have sold it to them. I mean, really. But I listen, during the last war with Gaza in May, I was asked by CNN, how come Israel doesn't supply Iron Dome to the Palestinians? It was a real question. I actually said, is that a real question? but that's my feeling, that I'm not a betting man. I didn't win on the Super Bowl, I want to tell you. But I think that this is not going to come to blows. I think there's ample room for diplomacy here. But someone's going to have to address Russia's concerns.
All right. This time next week, head of the Jewish Agency, Dr. Michael Oren. I hope. We'll see. Dr. Oren, always a pleasure talking to you. Follow him on Twitter, Dr. Michael Oren, former Israeli ambassador in the United States, who ought to be the head of the Jewish Agency, because whoever's picking that is letting billions walk out the door. Billions. Unbelievable. Hour number two of the Thursday edition of the Hugh Hewitt Show. Straight ahead, America. Stay with us. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Morning, Glory America. Bonjour. Hi, Kennedy. Hugh Hewitt live from the West Coast, joined by Senator Bill Hagerty of the great state of Tennessee. Good morning, Senator. How are you?
I'm great, Hugh. Good morning to you.
You know, there is a funnel in California that is tilted towards Knoxville, and I think everybody is falling into it. On two nights ago, after a special report, I'm doing that again tonight, I came and sat down with a businessman who said he's moving to Tennessee. It's just incredible what you're doing to California.
Well, it's California's own doing, I think, as much as it is Tennessee. But I've worked very hard, many of us have, to make Tennessee the best place in the nation to invest capital and the best place in the nation to raise a family.
Look, you can be Avis, but you can't be Ohio, Senator. So you're going to have to settle for second place. Let's talk national security. You are the former ambassador to Japan. You know about the Quad. You know about Putin, because Putin, of course, threatens Japan as much as he threatens Ukraine. What do you think he's doing? And do you think that there are reports this morning of two things: Russian-backed rebels shelling in the Donbass, and Russian fighter planes buzzing our surveillance aircraft in the Mediterranean? What do you make of these reports?
Look, Putin has been continually pressing Japan for years. Russian planes have been buzzing Japanese territory on a regular basis for years and years. You know, the dispute over the northern territories
has
continued. At the same time, I think Japan naively walked into discussions with Russia just a few days ago. Their foreign minister Hayashi was, I think, backpedaling from having discussions about stronger economic cooperation, because Japan views that as their ticket to get the situation with the northern territories in a better place. But at the same time, Japan is watching what's happening in the Ukraine very closely. And I think their Prime Minister Kishida is very much in line with us in terms of rejecting any action by Putin to unilaterally change the status quo there by force. But I think the whole world is watching right now in terms of what Russia is doing, amassing troops along the border there in Ukraine. The activity there that's underway, whether it be covert or whether it be an amassing of forces, is something that has everybody concerned and everybody watching America and what Joe Biden's response will be.
How do you evaluate that response thus far, Senator Bill Hagerty?
Well, it's just amazing to me how we've continued to watch this administration show weakness, to demonstrate weakness. You might help to just step back and give a bit of context to this, because that's how I view the situation. The first step that the Biden administration took when they came into office was to wage war on the petrochemical and the oil and gas industry here in America. They killed the Keystone XL pipeline. They stopped drilling. They killed our fracking industry. What's that done? It's created massive inflation in energy. It's raised energy prices on a global basis. The number two producer of energy in the world is Russia. So Vladimir Putin has had a massive windfall. That windfall is essentially paying for these malign activities. And then if you look at our negotiations directly with Russia, Vladimir Putin has been dealt a face card by Joe Biden at every turn, whether it be the New START treaty, whether it be Russia's ability to come in and hack the Keystone, hack the Colonial pipeline
yep.
here in America and have no repercussions for that whatsoever. In fact, Joe Biden shows up with a list of 16 industries and tells Putin, you better not attack these. Well, I can just imagine you. Putin takes a look down that list and says, gosh, I didn't even think about number nine. We better put that on our list as well. And what does it say about everything else in America's economy that is open for Russian attack? And then if you look at Nord Stream 2, that's absolutely the worst. These are congressionally mandated sanctions against Russia. What Biden has done is waived those Nord Stream 2 sanctions, allowed the Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline to be completed. Russia is going to wield that as a geopolitical energy weapon against European nations for generations to come. So again, he's been dealt the face card at every turn dealing with us. And then what happened? Afghanistan. There we've seen just a massive demonstration of weakness, a lack of resolve. And the buildup that's occurred since that point in time, I think, has been directly attributable to U.S. weakness.
Now, so Senator, you mentioned the price of oil. And I tell people Putin is paying for this adventure every single day that barrels of oil are over $90 a barrel because he makes one out of 10. One out of 10 barrels of oil in the world are Russia. And so he's making a premium on settling the oil markets. Your friends across the aisle, the Senate's a small place, and you've been there long enough. You know everybody. You just chat. You're there all day long, and you chat. Do they not get what cutting off fracking on public land, cutting off the Keystone Pipeline, do they not understand that that's just giving money to bad guys?
Well, think about my colleagues on the Democrat side that live in states like West Virginia. They've got to understand that. I've been doing media in West Virginia to make that point clearer and clearer every day. We have got to keep pressure on this, and this is making America weaker. It's pushing us into the arms of nations that don't have our best interests at heart. You know, you've got Biden actually begging the Middle East to pump more oil right now. We're going to our allies and asking them to try to free up reserves to help rescue Europe. We should be in a position to provide LNG to Europe. We shouldn't have to go to Japan and ask them to start setting aside LNG because they don't have any other source to produce it. I mean, this is something we've done. The energy policy that the Biden administration has adopted, taking us away from the position of energy independence where we were under President Trump to a place of energy dependence, has really weakened our national security and that of our allies.
You know, Senator, I think people get this. You travel around now all over the volunteer state and all over the country. I think people understand what President Biden has done to the energy production business. Am I correct?
I think so, because every person in Tennessee drives to work. We don't take the Acela. We're not on high-speed rail. We drive to work. And everybody in my state has suffered dramatically. Gas is up 50% at the pump, maybe more in some places. California, where you are, what is it? I hear $6, $7.
No, it's five. It's at $5.20 a gallon. I filled up yesterday. $5.20 a gallon.
Oh my God!
It's California. This is kind of the California tax is high. I'm only out here for 2 months for that reason. I got to go back to Virginia, where Glenn Youngkin's straightening things out in a couple of weeks.
Well, I think America is feeling it, though, and they know that this is directly attributable to Joe Biden's war on the oil and gas industry here.
All right. Next question. The Republicans, a lot of them met with Enos Kanter of Freedom yesterday. Were you among them?
No.
Okay. So I'll talk to Marsha Blackburn about that. Final question. The Olympics have totally tanked. I haven't watched 1 minute of them. I actually have no idea. Has America's corporation gotten the message? We want nothing to do with a dictatorial regime that's running concentration camps for Uyghurs, destroying Tibet and crushing Hong Kong.
I certainly hope so. I share your perspective on this as well, Hugh. I've encouraged everybody to tune this out. What I really wanted to see was the Biden administration push the IOC, push the International Olympic Committee, to put the pause button on this. You know, we just witnessed Japan postpone for a year a much larger Olympics, the Summer Olympics. We should have postponed this. We should have moved the Olympics out of China.
I agree with that completely. Senator Bill Hagerty, thank you for joining me. I appreciate the time, as always. This is the guy you go to when you want to talk about. Hey, Senator, you still with me? I got one more question.
Sure, Hugh.
Have you briefed Rahm Emanuel yet?
Yes. Yes, I have talked with Rahm extensively. He is already at his post in Japan, and I'm sure he's got a handful right now because Japan is extraordinarily nervous about what's happening in Ukraine. It's very difficult to defend our policies.
But I got to say, the least likely ambassador, if you've ever asked me who's going to be an ambassador, the mayor of Chicago? Really? I mean, does he, like, push Japanese people around? I mean, he's not really a subtle guy.
Well, a lot of diplomacy is negotiation, and what we need right now is an America that's standing tough in the world. And I've encouraged Ambassador Emanuel to do that, to project that. That's what we need to see, and I'm going to support him in doing just that.
Chicago rules. Come to Tokyo. That's going to be something to watch. Bill Hagerty, good to talk to you. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Welcome back, America. You do it from the West Coast this morning. Inside the Beltway, though, Senator Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee. Good morning, Senator. How are you?
I am doing well. Good morning to you.
I saw you posted a picture yesterday, a meeting with Enid Kanter Freedom. Tell our audience about that.
Yes, Enid came to lunch with the Republican senators yesterday, and we had a great visit. I have had him on my Unmuted with Marsha, my Facebook TV, and we've talked about freedom and talked about the work he's done to protect the Uyghur Muslims and to bring to light the genocide that the Chinese Communist Party is carrying out. So it was good to see him. It was good to have him here. We all feel for him because of the NBA letting him go. They did this over his being outspoken with the situation, the Chinese Communist Party. Of course, the NBA is very cozy with the Chinese Communist Party and China TV because of the amount of money that they make there and also because of the licensed products that are made for different athletic jerseys or shoes or balls or the things that are made there in Xinjiang province with slave labor, Uyghur slave labor.
Now, Senator, I'm sure that there are a lot of questions of him. Does he expect to play in the NBA again?
You know, I don't know if he expects to ever be picked up. He was traded, and then after he was traded, he was let go. So it appears that they just were trying to find a way to move him on. And it's just so very sad that the Chinese Communist Party is now dictating to some of these U.S.-based corporations and saying you can't do this or you can't do this or you can't offend us with that or you can't talk about that. And they are basically requiring these companies to kowtow to the Chinese Communist Party's rules and dictates of the day.
Now, we heard a lot about when Colin Kaepernick was allegedly blacklisted by the NFL and couldn't get a tryout. And a lot of people said, well, his skills had just gone. I don't know NFL quarterbacks, so the Browns didn't need one, so I didn't care. I am, however, I'm not persuaded Enid Kanter Freedom has no skill set. I mean, he got 12 boards and 7 points in his last game as a Celtic. I've watched the Cavaliers forever. There's a lot of bad talent floating around at the end of the bench, and he's not a bad talent. Does he think he's been blacklisted?
I did not ask him that specifically, and I wouldn't speak for him. But I tell you what, Hugh, if you can get him on your show, he speaks so eloquently about freedom and the importance of freedom and also about what his family in Turkey has been subjected to because he chose to speak out and defend the Uyghur Muslims.
Well, I will try and do that. Let me turn, if I can, to Ukraine. What do you hear this morning? I've read the Reuters report of shelling in the Donbas. I have read the New York Times report that they have 7,000 more troops, not fewer troops, more troops on the Russian team up against the Byelorussian border with Ukraine. What's the status, Senator Blackburn?
What we know is exactly what you have articulated, and he did not do a drawdown or de-escalate, that it appears that he has continued the escalation. We also know that his what he has done in the past is once the Olympics draw to a close, he will go in. This is what he did in Georgia in 2008, in Crimea in 2014. So we continue to watch. But I think it's important to note we would not be in this posture at this point if Joe Biden had exercised some leadership back in the fall, if he had put economic sanctions on Putin, the oligarchs, on the country, if he had said absolutely not to Nord Stream 2, if he had begun sales of lethal aid to the Ukrainian army so they could protect themselves. But see, Putin knows that Joe Biden is weak, that he just is rudderless. And Putin remembers that in 2014, when it came to dealing with the Ukraine, Obama and Biden sent the Ukrainian army meals ready to eat and blankets. In 2016, Donald Trump sent the Ukrainian army bombs and bullets. And, you know, Putin knows this, and he knows that Joe Biden does not have the strength to stand up there and start sending bombs and bullets.
I think you meant 2017, but I agree with you, Senator. Lethal aid is real. I do believe there was problems under Secretary Esper in getting stuff delivered as well. But the idea that we don't do anything in response to this is anathema to me. Can we go back to China for a second? You remember the great Estes Kefauver and great Tennessee senator. I don't know if you have his seat, or does Bill Hagerty have the Kefauver seat?
Hagerty.
Okay, so, well, Kefauver held Senate hearings on organized crime that really turned heads. I would like to see those sorts of hearings on the Chinese Communist Party influence in the United States, on the NBA, on Disney, on Nike, on everybody, because the CCP is influencing the United States culture in profoundly horrible ways. Do you agree with that?
I do think the CCP, by determining what different companies are going to do with making their products in China, with broadcasting as their shows in China, that they are having that impact. And I agree with you that there ought to be something done about this. And it is frustrating to me when there is a lack of willingness by some of my colleagues to call them out. And here's the thing, though, Hugh, and I think this is important. You have a lot of my colleagues across the aisle who still look at China as a competitor. And as I say, they are not a friend. They're not a frenemy. They're not a competitor. They are an adversary because their goal is to take us down, to replace us as a world superpower. And the sooner we admit that that is their posture, then we can move forward in holding them to account and looking at the adverse impact they're having. Look at what they have done through the Confucius Institutes that they were putting on college campuses.
I agree with you completely, Senator. And I think America, the ratings for the Olympics tell me, and they're so bad. They're just, nobody is watching. Nobody wants to be complicit with this regime. This regime is understood to be evil. This regime is understood to be engaged in genocide, destroying Hong Kong, destroying Tibet, threatening Taiwan. Everybody gets it. This regime is not the regime that Nixon dealt with when Mao was a doddering old man and Zhou Enlai was running things. Not the Deng Xiaoping regime. It's a vibrant, powerful tyranny. And we understand that. But I think the Senate could hold these hearings. You might talk to Leader McConnell about that, because I think you're on Foreign Affairs, aren't you, Senator, or is it Judiciary?
No, I'm on Judiciary.
Okay, well, Judiciary may be the place to hold them. I thought Foreign Affairs might be, too.
Well, and the thing is, this is why it's so important that we retake the Senate in November, so we can move forward to things like that, so we can do the investigations that need to surround the Durham investigation and get some answers for the American people. Because right now people are saying, what in the world is going on? We seem to be off kilter.
I agree with you. Thank you very much, Marsha Blackburn, Senator from Tennessee. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. NATO Secretary General Stoltenberg just said there are fears that Russia is working to find a pretext to use to invade Ukraine. I'm joined by former United States Senator Jim Talent of the Bipartisan Policy Center. Jim, I'm sure you're following these, but what do you think it means?
I think it means he's going to do what was always the most likely object of this from a military standpoint, which is to occupy Donbass.
That would be a minor incursion?
Yes, I think that's how NATO, or that's how the Europeans, I should say, would view it. I think the most likely way this will play out, now, again, we don't know, because he has the initiative view, because he has the power on the ground, okay? So we're reacting to him. But I think he'll occupy Donbass. There'll be some sanctions. That's an excuse for the Europeans not to be too tough in that regard, and I mean the Germans in particular. And then we'll wait until he decides to do the next thing in a year or 2 years, and we'll have another fire drill. That's what I think. And the reason is I've said this. I mean, people act like it doesn't matter that we're outmanned and outgunned on the ground in Eastern Europe by a massive proportion. He has the power.
Now, Senator Talent, this morning the New York Times ran a story about how Putin's darkest fears are in a Poland forest, a U.S. base, a missile base. That missile base is there to deter Iran from launching intercontinental ballistic missiles at the United States or at Europe. And he knows it, and I know. I do not know why the New York Times is peddling his propaganda.
Yes, but, the right reaction to this when he complains about missile defense in Eastern Europe is to say, we'll put whatever defenses we want if our allies agree to them in Eastern Europe. We don't have to, regardless of who it's directed at, we're going to defend our alliance. And we would be able to do this, if we had not reduced the size and strength of America's forces and our forward posture abroad. While all this has been going on, go and read the Index of Military Strength the Heritage puts out. In the last 4 years, the buying power of the United States Army has dropped by about 10% because of flat budgets and inflation.
And we remain in a continuing resolution, which makes it actually impossible to run the Pentagon.
It much worse. We don't even pass appropriations bills. No, I agree. And it's a ground domain, and we're outmanned and outgunned on the ground. And it's very difficult to deter kinetic aggression with economic tools,
We should repeat that a few times. Very difficult to deter kinetic aggression with economic tools.
Right.
Yesterday in the Mediterranean, two Russian fighters buzzed and came within 5 feet of two P-8s. Those were surveillance aircraft. What happens if a Russian fighter collides with an American plane, Jim Talent? They're not that good. People need to realize they're not that good.
It just heightens tensions. One of the things we don't know in a situation like this is whether this was something Moscow ordered or whether this was the failure of deconfliction protocols. My guess is the latter. I think the focus of what he's doing is preparing the information environment for him to occupy Donbass. I mean, I thought all along that was the most likely thing, potentially. Creating a land bridge to Crimea, that was another possibility. If we were outfitting Ukrainians, equipping and training them on a continued basis to defend themselves, and if the administration would send down a supplemental appropriations request for the Army, a significant one, to increase the number, I would say particularly of heavy armored brigades, with a view towards increasing our posture in Eastern Europe, it's not going to be anything like Cold War levels. That's the best way to punish him for this.
I agree with that. I just don't know that we're going to get any clarity from the president. I like his statement that every inch of NATO is NATO and Article 5 applies. That was a good, strong statement. And it was a good, strong statement to say, and then Nord Stream 2 is dead. But he's got to say we'll blow it up because the Germans don't say that, do they, Jim Talent?
No, the Germans said we'll act together. And I think if he were to do a mechanized invasion of the whole country, there's a much better chance that the Germans would do that. I think it would be so embarrassing for them, they'd almost have to. That's one of the reasons I don't think he's going to do that. And there's other reasons as well, and Admiral Stavridis talked about, I think last week on your show, the reasons why that was unlikely, or I've always thought it was unlikely, although he could make a mistake and do that. No, I think he's going to continue to slice off pieces of the country and to threaten our allies in the Baltics.
Well, you know, the...
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
The Article 5 protection of the Baltics is strong, and the Americans should know we are committed to their defense.
Yeah, but unless we have to defend our allies, I mean, or we're not going to have alliances. I mean, the primary thing we bring to these are key alliances, which is NATO and then the ones in Indo-PACOM with the Japanese, the Filipinos, the Aussies, and the others. What we bring to that is we're the security guarantor. Now, of course, they cooperate with us and prepare to defend themselves. But, you know, when you're talking about China or Russia, they need us to back them up. And if we're not prepared to do that, the alliances collapse, which is really what Putin, one of the things he's probing around to try and cause.
Oh, he's carving Germany out like a turkey, and it's working. Jim Tallon of the Bipartisan Policy Center. Follow him at Twitter. Read his column at National Review. Twitter, it's very easy. Jim Tallon at Jim Tallon. I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Morning, glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt on the West Coast this morning. It's one of my annual trips to the border where I make the western borders route. One of those stops took me to Arizona 12 days ago to moderate a debate among the four would-be replacements for Doug Ducey in the Arizona governor's mansion. Doug Ducey is a good friend of mine. One of those four is joining me now. I had never met Justin Olson until last week. He served in the state assembly. He's an Arizona corporation commissioner. He is a veteran of Capitol Hill, and he was a great debater. Hello, Justin. Good morning. Welcome to the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Well, good morning, Hugh. It's a pleasure to be here with you. But I'm actually running for U.S. Senate.
Did I say governor? I did both debates, and I get those confused.
I did both debates,
and so it's the Arizona Senate debate. Justin, I want you to start with some bio for people, and make sure you tell them you've got 9 kids, because I'm still reeling.
That's exactly right. I'm a family man. You know, we've got 5 kids. My oldest is 18. He's getting ready to serve a mission. So he's going off to Romania in just a few weeks, which we're very excited for him, very proud. Got 5 boys, 4 girls. I'm native of Arizona. My family history goes back 6 generations here. I love our country and I love our state, and I want to make sure that we keep it free. That's why I've been engaged in public policy. I've served as the CFO for Turning Point USA, where I've been in the trenches teaching the rising generation to love our country, to defend the principles that made our country great. I've also served in public office where I've fought for and defended those principles as well.
So, Justin, that means you're a member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints if they're going off to a mission. Did you serve a mission? I always ask my law students on the first day of class, where are my missionaries? And then I just drill them down because they're unfazed by anything. If you've knocked on thousands of doors for 2 years, a law professor is not going to bother you. Did you serve a mission?
I did. I served in the Dominican Republic for 2 years, fluent in Spanish, and it absolutely is something that was helpful in many life lessons. You know, running for office the first time, I knocked thousands of doors. That was something that I was familiar with. Got a lot of rejection, but I was able to keep on going and tell the Arizonans that I was running because we needed a proven conservative to fight for fiscal responsibility, low taxes, to get the economy growing again after the Great Recession. I delivered on that promise, balanced the budget, cut taxes, grew the economy, and got Arizonans back to work.
Yeah, Justin, I am amazed that you did not lead off by telling people you had served an LDS mission in the DR and then break into some Spanish. Because obviously, if you're going to go to the DR, I've been in the worst slums of the Dominican Republic with Children USA, and I know what that is like. That's a tough assignment.
Oh, it was great, though. I loved it. I loved being part of the community, being in the heart of the what we called the campo, out in the field, out in the small towns. You know, I kept telling my oldest son that he was going to go to the Dominican Republic and he was going to love it. You know, my wife was thinking it was going to be Bulgaria. She was a whole lot closer than I was, and he got called to Romania. But so excited for him to serve. So proud of all of our kids. You know, my next oldest is just a great musician. She's involved in marching band. She's in the top orchestra, the top choir. My next oldest son and plays basketball. We just love each one of our children, just like every family out there. And we want to make sure that we're passing on a strong and a free country to our kids and our grandkids. And a lot of us are very concerned. The country's on the brink. You know, not only do folks out there want to enact socialism, they're bold, emboldened about it. They don't even hide the fact anymore that that's the path they want to go down. And that's why I'm charging up this hill, to make sure that we protect the principles established in our Constitution.
Let me play for you a little AOC yesterday. Cut number 14 for Justin Olson.
We fought tooth and nail for the inclusion of undocumented people in relief packages, stimulus checks, FEMA assistance, and we've actually helped huge amounts of undocumented families in our district get federal relief that many others were trying to lock them out of.
So, Justin Olson, should undocumented families have qualified for stimulus payments?
Not at all. You know, I mean, that's what's wrong with the radical left, is that they are enticing folks to put themselves in harm's way, and they're creating what's a humanitarian crisis. You know, I mean, it breaks my heart to see young infant children being dropped over the border wall and abandoned by smugglers. This should not be happening in the United States of America, and it's because of the failed policies of the Biden administration, enabled by folks like Senator Mark Kelly in the Senate and AOC. When we put in place these enticements to encourage people to put themselves in harm's way, it's wrong, and we should not do it, and it's also harmful to American communities. Because of this chaos at the border, the drug cartels are empowered, and they're able to increase the amount of fentanyl that's coming across the border, and these substances are killing Americans. We've got to put a stop to it. We've got to secure our borders.
Now, Justin, you've got a sitting Attorney General, Mark Brnovich. You've got Blake Masters, who's got Peter Thiel and his money behind him, and Blake's got his own money. You've got a former Army Ranger. You've got the former candidate for Secretary of State. You've got a lot of people in this race, five qualified people. How do you win, and how do you raise the money? Arizona's an expensive state. I mean, we're on right now in Phoenix and Tucson, but it's and Prescott, but it's an expensive state to reach everywhere.
It is, you know, but the way that I'm going to win is the way that I've won in my other elections. You know, I've been outspent every time I've had a challenging race. But when I ran statewide and won in 2018, when many of our fellow Republican statewide candidates fell short, I was outspent by more than 30-1. Tom Steyer came in with $4 million supporting my Democrat opponent, but I was still successful. And I'll tell you why. It was because I've served Arizonans with the highest standards of ethics and integrity. And voters saw in me someone that earnestly sought the best interests of Arizonans. And that's how we're going to win again. Now, I'm the only candidate in this race with a proven conservative record. Voters don't have to wonder, what am I going to do when I'm elected? You know, I'm not one of those candidates that's going to let voters down, as we've been let down so many times, because voters can look to see, what have I done? I've got a proven conservative record in the state legislature. I passed successful legislation to balance the budget for the first time in many years. I passed successful legislation to cut our income taxes, to defund Planned Parenthood, to defund Obamacare. I funded our border strike force to protect our communities. I voted to ban ballot harvesting to protect the integrity of our elections. I got an A rating from the National Rifle Association, and the list goes on. I've not only made promises, I've kept them, and that's how we're going to win. We're going to energize the base, because they know that in me they have a fighter who's going to challenge the entrenched status quo in both parties, charge up that hill, and protect and preserve our Constitution for generations to come.
Now, Justin Olson, we went from John McCain and John Kyle, two of the most influential senators in the United States. I think John Kyle's the best man I knew in the Senate when he was serving, to Mark Kelly and Kyrsten Sinema. And that's largely because of one guy named Jeff Flake. I like Jeff. I campaigned for Jeff back in the days before I went to work for the Washington Post and can't campaign for people. But Jeff basically destroyed the Republican get out the vote effort for Martha McSally by attacking Trump all the time. And how do people know you're not going to do a Jeff on us?
Well, it's because of that proven record. You know, folks look to his record, and, you know, it's been a record of supporting open borders. I mean, even as late as or far back as 2006, I remember Stan Barnes was running against Jeff Flake, two good friends of mine. And, you know, that was the issue that Stan was running on, is that we need to secure our borders. And that was something that Jeff Flake did not agree with. And that's what frustrated folks when he got to the Senate and he was part of the Gang of Eight and he wanted open borders. You know, in me, they've got someone who supported law enforcement, who's funded the Border Strike Force. I'm going to fight relentlessly to secure our borders, to finish the wall, to properly fund our Border Patrol, to enact an e-verify requirement, to put in place the Remain in Mexico policy so that we can get operational control of our borders. We can stop this humanitarian crisis that's dangerous for American communities.
So, Justin, let's conclude. How do people find you? What's the website? I know the Twitter handle. I've already put it out on my Twitter handle, but what's the website?
It's votejustinolson.com. I'd be honored to have the support of your listeners, both in Arizona and outside. The battle for Republican control of the Senate runs straight through Arizona. With their help, we can get this done.
We absolutely need the Arizona seat. Mark Kelly's got to be beaten. Justin, if it's you, count on me. I'm neutral in the primary, but I am going to be all in for whoever the nominee is. Thank you, Justin.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.